Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with master double bass player John Lamb. As you will hear me say at the beginning of this interview, I interviewed John once before for an hour, and somehow it didn't record. So this is our second interview. And I didn't ask him the things that I asked him in the first interview. In this interview, we talked virtually exclusively about himself as a musician, about his musicianship. I say at the beginning of the interview that lots of people may never have heard him play and may never hear him play. And so he talks about the way he constructs his bass solos. And it is fascinating, interesting, unique. He goes on to talk about himself as a musician, about how he listens, how he determines what to play based on what the other musicians and or singers are playing and or singing with him. He also talks about himself as an educator. This is a very thoughtful and in some ways provocative interview, but always, always interesting. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from
The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are. I always say it's not about being the person you think you're supposed to be or the person other people told you you had to be or should be. It's not about trying to decide what kind of person you should be. It's not about figuring out how you can make yourself someone that has an impact on others. All of these ways of being, which so many of us are doing, cheat us from the reality of being the person we really are. There is a person that you really are. There is someone that each one of us really is. And that person does not need to be altered, changed, manipulated, diminished, expanded. That person is enough. Unfortunately, too many of us have experiences in our childhood which suggest, and sometimes quite painfully, that what we are is not enough, or in some instances, that what we are is too much. Experiences in our family of origin, and in lots of other venues, certainly schools, peers, teachers, have a lot to say about what we should be and what we shouldn't be. And unfortunately, very many parents believe that they know what their children should or shouldn't be. And if they get a child who is not that, if they get a child that doesn't look the way they want a child of theirs to look, if they get a child who is more outspoken than they want a child to be, if they get a child that's smarter than they want a child to be, it's not impossible for a child to know more relatively quickly than a parent. And some parents absolutely cannot tolerate that. So, if a parent gets a child who is not exactly what they want, and that parent doesn't understand the importance of encouraging what the child is, they can, and many do, try and alter the child. And this can be done in a number of ways. There's just criticism. Oh, don't do that. Oh, no, you don't feel that. So there's just the verbal expression. Then there's the rolling of the eyes, the turning away, the shrugging of the shoulders, all this nonverbal expression that lets someone know that what they did is not all right. And more poignantly, more painfully, harsh criticism, punishment, trauma. Children who get the idea that something about them is not okay learn very quickly to begin to pretend that that is not true. And if the pretending is good enough, they come into adulthood not realizing that they don't have access to their entire self. The Lynn Show is about saying that being yourself is worth the price, if there is one. And that if for some reason you came into adulthood without access to all of who you are, it is not too late to recover what you may have had to deny and consequently feel like you lost. In my shows, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. I do this because when you listen to them, you can tell what it sounds like to be who you really are. My interview today with John Lamb is an example of someone who is so very much himself, someone who stands out in the crowd of musicians and also of educators and also of just plain human beings. John Lamb is a one-of-a-kind. He's a person who is consistently himself. And this makes him an interesting human being in the world, but in addition, it makes him a fascinating musician. John Lamb is not playing what other people play. He's not playing what other people think they want to hear. John Lamb is playing what minute to minute it seems to him is the right thing to play. And he's alive to every minute. What the trumpet is playing, what the piano is playing, what the singer is singing. He actually says in this interview that if they're off pitch, he will adjust. But more than that, when John plays, everyone stops to listen. You'll hear me say that in this interview. Because there's something incredibly compelling about the reality of what he's playing, how very present he is, how minute to minute he's creating this thing on the spot out of what he says is the 12 or 13 notes he has to work with. It's a fascinating description of a master musician at work. So, now, the extraordinary, very charming, very funny, John Lamb. Okay. So I'm here with John Lamb again.
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 John and I did this once before. We talked for over an hour. Yes. He told me everything there is to know about John Lamb, and I hadn't recorded it.
I'm not certain that I would remember everything that we talked about.
No, I remember a lot of it, but it's okay. I'm not going to ask you to do that again because because it seems unfair. But you had just started to say, this is how you play your solos. You remember?
Yes. A bass solo is a composition within a composition.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I form. I have a beginning. I make like A form, you know, A, B. Now, section A, I'll say something. Section B, I'll do something different.
You're making a composition.
Yes. And that's
wow.
That's what's good. They call it building a solo.
Who calls it?
Oh, a lot of people in the music world. They call it building a solo. And so we build on sections like art.
Mm-hmm.
Like poetry.
Yes.
That's what it is.
Well, and I'm gonna ask you, I didn't ask you, but I want a copy of you playing something. I want some of your music so I can play that for these people, especially if you have an example of what you're talking about. You know, a solo that you have on CD somewhere that I can
play. Well, I'll get the one with the Far East Suite of Duke Ellington.
Oh, lovely.
Okay, it's called Ad Lib on Nippon.
Ad Lib on Nippon?
Yes.
As in Japan?
Yeah.
Really?
And that'll give you some of, you'll find the composition within the composition.
Yeah, I'm sitting here thinking it's really too bad. Most of the people who are going to listen to this interview, who are listening to this interview, will not have had an opportunity to hear you play. They won't have an opportunity to hear you do these solos live, spontaneously, as I have. And they're just amazing. You can feel it in the room when you start to play, no matter what's been going on before, that everybody is riveted. And it must be because not only you're so skilled, but because you're doing this thing, you're building something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's something that everyone can relate to.
Yes, yes.
It's simple.
Well.
Oh, well, I've gone through every method book in this conservatory. But I can never use all of that. I only need the most important notes. notes that people can hear and feel. And we use our melody and rhythm and harmony and our compositional forms. And you put all those skills together and simplify it, and it comes out as a well-rounded composition.
Yeah, well, I probably you know this, but you're also funny when you play.
I am.
You are.
How?
You know, I'm trying to think. I don't know. I thought it was what you choose to play. Sometimes you'll reference other songs, and that'll be interesting. But it's whimsical. You're whimsical when you play. Mm-hmm. Did you not think so?
I don't know. The music is coming through me the way
yes.
I feel about it.
Right, right. Have you not noticed that people smile and giggle
yes.
and laugh when you play?
Yes.
They do.
Yeah. You know, I'm not trying to revolutionize the bass. It will happen. Or I'm not trying to revolutionize music. I only play music that's based on my own experiences. I'm not trying to emulate or imitate something that I heard on a record.
No, that's really clear, because nothing I have heard you play have I ever heard anywhere before.
And in the beginning, I had to imitate in order to learn. But as the years have gone by, I play whatever
comes out.
Up here.
Right, right.
That's right.
Now, that's an interesting thing. Does it go through your head, or is it just in your fingers? You know what I mean?
Well, some of it is emotional. Some of it is thought. It's a combination.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it, of course, is having motorized the fingers.
The fingers, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But it's a combination of all those things. And it's a combination of the environment that I've been exposed to.
Yeah.
It's all those things. And
so,
the different musicians and so on.
So when you start to do a solo, do you have some idea of what you're going to do?
Well, I think I have about 12 or 13 notes to choose from.
Right?
I know all the notes.
I know. Yes, you do.
Yeah. And you know, it's just a matter of, putting these combinations together so that they will make sense. You see, I understand that the ear is built a certain way, harmonically speaking.
I don't understand.
When we go to a doctor's office,
right,
they play, when we have a hearing test, they play certain tones for
right.
us, and we raise our hands. These tones are harmonics,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you take any string, guitar string, bass string, it's based upon harmonics.
Right.
All of music is based upon harmonics. And you can find every note and scale in each one of those strings, you know, in just open positions. They're all there. Now, all I'm saying is this, I choose whatever note that I feel, you know, based on my studies that I would like to do and things that I hear coming out of someone else.
What else is playing, right.
That's what I meant earlier about not being together with that.
Yeah, no,
individual.
I understand,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because sometimes other things get in the way of what I'm feeling or hearing.
Right.
And so, and in accompanying, I'm skipping around a little bit.
This is fine.
In accompanying, people that are accompanying have to be very sensitive
yes.
as to what the person that's out front trying to do, because a bass player does that all of the time. I have to be sensitive enough to accompany and not get in the way what the performer is doing.
Yes.
And when it's the reverse, a lot of them have not had the experience.
They just don't understand that.
And they fall all over
you. All over you.
They step all over you.
That's right.
So, you know.
Well, and I know because I've sung in front of you that you're supporting what I'm doing. And it's like a dance, you know.
That's what it is. And, you know, it's a matter of respect, for someone else's skill and their abilities and whatever they're trying to say. If they want to say it on this level or high level or low level, it doesn't matter to me. I'm still going to play the same notes.
Yeah.
Same 12, aren't they? 12 notes? I haven't counted them lately, but they're 12 or 13. But I'm
I don't think they've changed, actually.
No, I'm going to play the same notes. Of course, if they play a little bit out of tune, and I have to go a little bit higher or a little bit lower in order to blend with whatever they're doing.
Are you really?
Yeah. I've been in situations in the band where the trumpet section would play with a certain structure or harmonic feeling or sound or whatever it is, and I have to play with them one way. And then when the saxophones came in, I had to play a different way with them. And when they finish, when the trio section play, I'd play a different way.
Oh my God.
Sound. Sure.
Now, did you learn that, or is this intuitive?
Well, over the years, I learned it.
No, I mean, were you taught it, or did you just figure it out?
No, I wasn't taught that.
No, I never heard this before.
Well, because I learned over the years.
So you learned it from playing?
From playing, yeah.
And from having an extraordinary ear and a lot of sensitivity. Do you have a favorite kind of music that you like to play?
I love music. I can sit and listen to anybody, but not everybody too long. It doesn't matter if it's jazz, I can't take too much of it at one time. If it's classical, I can't take too much of it at one time. Country music, I can't take too much of it one time. Or any kind. But I can listen to anybody's music for a short period of time. We're dealing with notes and we're dealing with vibrations of air. Mm. And everybody expresses themselves in their own manner.
Mm.
Doesn't make one more right than the other. It's just, it's still the same things, you know, the same vibrate. And so I have an appreciation because having taught kids, they come in from different cultures and they bring their own ideas. I used to have the kids bring in their music once a week to show us what they like.
Do you want to explain what you taught, the circumstances under which you were teaching?
Explain what I taught?
Yeah, just tell. So, I mean, these people don't know.
Oh, I taught music in a middle school, music appreciation. I taught chorus and band. And then I taught at the college.
So in the middle school, you had them bringing in the music that they liked?
Yeah.
So what did they bring in?
Whatever they had in their drawer at home, whatever they liked. And I had all kinds of things come in. You see, we're there to teach everyone, not just a few people, the few snobbish few, as I say.
Yes, yes.
Everybody should be able to enjoy.
Okay, all right. So what I hear is a shocking lack of judgment. So how did you arrive at that?
A shocking lack
of judgment. I mean, it's a funny way to say it, but I mean...
You mean judging someone else's culture background?
Yeah, a shocking amount of acceptance.
Well, I'm a teacher of humanity. not just a few people, you know.
But so how did that happen?
It happened, I learned it.
Where did you learn it?
I learned it from having taken all those methods courses, college courses.
Those courses. Those courses quite
and play
often.
Playing clubs and all that stuff. All of that.
I don't know, John. That's a personal thing. I think that's a part of the person.
Well, I had to learn it somewhere.
Well, what about your family?
What about it?
Were they accepting or were they judgmental?
I have several families now. No,
I'm talking about the first family. Did you think of them as kind of inclusive or did you think of them as exclusive and judgmental?
My family was never judgmental. They were very supportive. They didn't know exactly what I was doing all the time. But they were very supportive and I was encouraged.
Yeah, that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
See, that's where it comes from.
But I think I've been very fortunate in the respect that I've been able to appreciate everyone's music. And yeah. I think that's the role of a teacher.
Well, yes, clearly that is a necessity for any kind of good teaching, is the ability to incorporate everybody and accept everybody and let everybody be their best.
I heard some things in your music the other day that were delightful. Yes. Sometime I'll go through it with you and say,
will you really?
Did I hear that? Sure, I'll play it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Wow. So, still, you know, a lot of musicians are snobs.
Yeah.
Especially musicians with your level of skill and...
Especially those that think that they have the inside track.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's why certain types of music have gone down in popularity because... A lot of them have forgotten about the people, and some people, when they figure they have learned so much, or they have gained so much knowledge, everyone else is sort of like...
Beneath them.
Yeah. And then it's the other way around, too. A lot of people that come in the places and the clubs, they're not good listeners, either.
No.
So it works both ways.
Yes.
You see, we need at least three elements when performing music. We need to have a performer.
Mm-hmm.
We need a composer. Mm. A composer can be somebody walking down the streets whistling something that they don't know anything about.
Yes.
Got to have a composer. You got to have somebody to capture that melody. You need someone else to perform it. And you need listeners.
Yes.
Got to have listeners. So all of these have to come together in order for it to be really, really successful. I once heard a great man say this. Why is it, it's a jazz musician too, why is it that the Europeans seem to appreciate your music more than the Americans? The reply was, they have older ears.
Yeah. You know, there's a story about this American landscape artist who wanted to learn to create the perfect lawn. And so he went to England because they've got these incredible lawns, right? And I think this is true, I'm not sure, but I think it's true. And so he went to learn, to study with the English, landscape people. So he said to this English landscape guy, how did you make this amazing lawn? And the guy said, well, you know, you put the seed down, and then you water it, and you do it for 100 years. You know? And
yeah.
There is something to be said,
yes,
for the depth of experience.
Definitely. Well, my kids used to come in, and sometimes they would feel, some of them would feel that their music was better than someone else's music because they had heard it on the radio. I says, well, look, you don't need me. Why don't you hire the disc jockey?
I've
used this terminology. I use an adjective to describe the disc jockey. I said, won't you hire the blank disc
jockey?
Yes,
right. Not a pleasant adjective.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I said, let them teach you. They seem to have more influence over music than the teacher who has been to a 4 or 5 year college.
Right, and worked his ass off.
And they are promoting the most popular music on that's available because somebody is trying to make a profit.
Yes, or right. Somebody paid them.
Yeah.
Right, there's no question about it. And that's of course the other thing, is that so much of what we hear is just manipulated. You know, and if you play something over and over and over again, people hum it. I mean, that's just the way it is.
Right.
You know, you get it in your head.
I defy any disc jockey to say that they know more bass notes than I do. I know all of them, like I said.
Yes.
At least 12 or 13.
Right. Well, most disc jockeys don't play. When I was in elementary school, we were listening to classical music. I remember the Hall of the Mountain King. I remember being frightened by it. But I remember hearing that, you know, as a 6 and 7, 8 year old kid. They're not doing that now. You know? So what they got is what they got. It's what they hear, you know?
Oh, well, let's say this now. Electronic music.
Mm.
We talked about the string, any string, guitar string, bass string. All the harmonics are there.
Right.
Electronic music just brings out certain harmonics. And they can break those harmonics, into smaller and smaller pieces, and they can amplify each one of those pieces so that they can make a composition out of it.
Right, right. But they didn't write anything.
Yes.
Right. Okay, so nobody in your family played, is that correct?
You're talking about
musicians, your family, your first family.
First family.
Right, the family into
my
whom you were born.
My mother didn't play an instrument. My daddy didn't play an instrument. My sister did not play an instrument. One sister played a little piano, yes. I had a brother that played nothing but sports.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
So where did you come from, John, then?
I don't know where I came from. You know, my mother asked that one time.
Did she?
Yeah, where'd you come from? I said, look, I came from you.
And she said...
No, she used to sing a lot in church, and they all sang, and they all went to church. And
so they loved music.
And of course. Everybody loved music. Music was our saving grace. That's the only thing we had going for us.
Yes.
Since the early 1500s or 1600s, you know. And so it's just a part of the culture. And you went to church, and you sang, and you got rid of all those weekly frustrations and all
that kind of stuff. Right.
Sure.
Because anybody who sings knows that when you're singing, everything is fine.
When a person says, use the syllable om.
Om, yes.
That's singing.
Yes, I know.
You know, I heard something in your voice that suggested to me that you've done a lot of singing.
Yes, over my life.
Especially that first one I heard. And so singing, as you know, does a lot of things that the so-called om does, except there's only one pitch. All pitches are encompassed into one, and it's supposed to go through the roof of the head and all that stuff and fill all the cavities, and you know what I mean?
I do. And connect you to the universe.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if you listen to the entire CD at the very end, there's me singing at 18 months old. I'm singing zippity-doo-dah.
I heard that.
Did you? No, that's...
That was you?
That was my first recording.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, no, I swear. I was
it's my kinda, so it's kinda cute. Yeah. I was wondering why you put it there.
Because it's my we sent it to my dad overseas in World War II. So I mean really, they say I was singing songs off the radio before I was speaking sentences.
Huh.
You know, I mean I was attached.
This was in New York, huh?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Mm-hmm. I was attached. Yeah. Very, very young. And I do know what it means to sing. There's nothing wrong when you're singing.
You know, I had a couple of semesters of voice.
Oh, yeah.
One was from a student in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. She had to grab somebody and teach them as part of her teaching experience.
So she
grabbed
me.
So I sang for her, and then later on, for recertification in the school system, I took voice for a couple of semesters.
Mm-hmm.
And the singing, what it does, it just causes vibrations throughout the entire head, and the tears just come down.
I know. I've been thinking, I do.
They just... And she was talking about all of this, and here she says, "That's okay." So it's a wonderful experience. The singing experience is wonderful.
I know. And what's sad is that so many people aren't able to sing because they get judged. That's not a good voice, or you're not on pitch, or you're not, whatever it is, you know. My mother had a belt voice. As a young girl, she had, you know, an alto belt voice, and she tells the story of how people were asked to come up and perform, and my mother came up and performed, and she wasn't a soprano, and the teacher, oh goodness, and the teacher didn't like that she had this belt voice, that she wasn't. Oh, yes, Vanessa, it's okay.
Yeah.
Go say hello to them. Go.
Maybe they're trying to steal the bass out of the car.
You want to look?
I know. The alarm is on.
Yeah, right. This is my alarm now. I now have an alarm.
Yeah.
And so the teacher said to the class, "So class, how many of you like this kind of singing?" With the clear suggestion that they should say they didn't like it. And my mother didn't sing after that.
Mm.
You know? And I think that happens to a lot of people. And so they don't get the joy of it.
It's true.
So is it similar when you're playing? Because it sure looks like you're completely connected to the thing.
Oh, definitely.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, like, the world is barely there.
There is a connection. There is an esoteric thing that says that the human form is used as a vehicle to express what it has to say.
And does that mean that...
Let me say that again.
Please.
There's an esoteric saying, not commonly used, that we, our physical beings, are used as vehicles to say or express something that is greater than ourselves.
Yes.
One of them being vibrations of air, and we call it sound, organized sound. Some of it's noise because it has been distorted.
Okay.
Because the vibrations are irregular, and those vibrations that are regular comes out as a song or sound.
Is this
Did
like...
Did that come out right?
What?
Did that come out right?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yeah.
Is it a kind of a universal thing that we're expressing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you said it right there. You've heard the expression that music is universal.
Yes, that's
what
right.
It is.
Right. And so it's a kind of a joining thing. It joins people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it
we played all over the world, and people have come together as a result of that. They loved it. They didn't know what we were playing, but
yes, but they They felt it.
Yeah.
It enters the person at a place below the conscious mind, at some place deeper.
Everything in the universe vibrates. Mm-hmm. Everything in the universe vibrates.
Okay. Everything in the universe vibrates.
Yes. Even a stone. Even a stone. When we talk,
we're vibrating.
When we move,
right.
Everything vibrates at a different rate of speed. And that's what gives each little entity its own characteristic, because of the speed and the rate at which they are vibrating.
So that is something that joins us, that we're all
vibrating. That's what we are.
Right. You wouldn't know that to see how...
Well, maybe a lot of humanity hasn't evolved to that level yet.
Clearly.
They're using distorted vibrations of air.
And making noise.
Trying to communicate with each other.
Right.
What do you think bombs are? That's distortion. Vibrations. Distorted. They make noise.
Why they do.
But if those sounds were more organized, I think people would come together.
And
it's based on love.
Yes.
I'm not talking about physical love. It's a love that transcends...
Division.
That's right.
Yes. So in an ironic way, as a musician, you are joining people. That's what you're doing.
People come there to feel good.
Yes, they do.
They don't give a damn what you had for breakfast.
Right.
Or they want to know what you're going to do to make them feel good.
Right. Actually, they don't give a damn about anything about you.
That's right.
Except that this thing that you're doing, right, exactly, it's coming through. And
I see the smiles on their faces.
Yes.
I see the smile, and that's called returning. We're giving to them, and they're giving back.
I know. I know that one too. Voice and performance for a while. When I was studying, teacher said, you know, when there's somebody in the audience who's not listening to you, don't be paying attention to that person and singing to that person. Be singing to the people who are listening to you. You know,
right.
Focus on them. Don't worry about the other ones, you know. And of course, the temptation is to try and bring the other people around, you know. But I think he was right, that you give to the people who are open.
And everybody isn't on the same level.
No, and everybody else isn't.
It takes a great deal of understanding, though. A great deal of understanding to know that people are on different levels. They're also on different levels of musicianship. That's why we're sort of tolerant of others.
Right.
Not on our levels. And others are tolerant toward me if I don't do what they want, or either that or get somebody else, you know.
Right.
But that's what it is. You have so many different levels of things here. And they are endless.
Yes. But underneath, it's all the same.
Yeah.
Right.
One big...
Vibration.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
I don't know who created the vibration. They say the Earth came about as a result of a Big Bang. Mm-hmm. Something was vibrating out there in the universe to cause it to crash or explode.
Right.
Their vibrations.
Right.
There are only three things in existence. Light, color, and sound. I made a bold statement.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
But think about it. Look at the light.
Right.
Look at the color. Then you look out at it. Sound, vibrations of air. Look at it.
So now, are light and color also vibrations?
Light.
It is, isn't
vibration.
It? Yes, it does.
Color has certain vibrations.
Right.
That's why it looks a certain way. Red, blue, white, green, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
sound like concert.
So, did you always have this idea?
No.
No.
It was acquired over a period of time.
So you found music before you found this. Is that correct?
I found my music after I found myself.
Could you say something about that?
The more I learn how to live,
ah,
the more the music came through and people could understand. There was a time when I was on stage and I was playing all kinds of fancy notes. Fast, you know, young teenager, you know. And it didn't mean a thing to the listeners.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear you say that. And when you say it, I know one of the things that's so wonderful about listening to you is that you don't do that. You're not showing off. You're not saying, see how many notes I can play in this short period of time. You are playing something that matters, that we can grab onto, that speaks. You know, it's not just... See, I can play all these notes in this chord. I know where all the notes in this chord are, you know. And so many people think that that's really virtuosity. But I never have.
You know, a lot of, like, as you said, some people think a lot of notes is virtuosity. But the sound itself is, which is one of the elements of speed. Well, sound, the way it comes across. Oh, the way one looks at another person when they're playing certain notes. That was meant for you. And this is meant for you. You see, if you were into the technical bag, you see, I'll do something there for you,
yeah,
to show that, well, it's possible, but that's not the whole bag. There are many, many elements. It's like looking at the sunset. There are many colors.
Yes.
You choose whatever you would like and add that to your...
Take what you like and leave the rest.
Right. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. And it explains a lot about why you play the way you do. And it's so interesting. I mean, do you remember when you started to develop especially the solo style? Do you remember when you started to develop this, how this happened?
I was told that, this may sound egotistical.
We'll risk it.
But I remember a good friend of mine in Philadelphia told me, he says, I used to watch you play. And believe it or not, you played with an attitude that of kindness, mm-hmm. not one of ego, or one of being above someone else. He says, you came into town and you proved to musicians that you can play and still be kind and good. And
that it's not
loving.
A competition.
Yeah. And he says, I believe that you raise the level.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't know this until about 4 years ago. And I was in Philly in the early 60s. He just came out and said this, you know. He says, yes, you did that.
Wow. Are you saying...
So those kind of statements are... Oh, here we go again. Those kind of statements are humbling statements, you know. I mean, things that makes me feel... You know,
yes, I do, but yeah. Well, are you saying that other people could see this in you and you didn't really get it?
No, I didn't get it. And yeah. They said also that, he says, whenever you played a solo, he says, there were trumpet players and piano players that were envious. I had no idea.
No, because you weren't.
But others were observing.
Right.
And, you know, he didn't have to say this to me.
No, of course not.
And he said it to me several times since then.
But you're aware of it now.
Well, I'm beginning to accept it, but you know, it's
well, so I'm so glad you lived long enough to do that.
Yeah, and like I said, it's really humbling when somebody says that to you.
Well, but you know, it seems to me that it's the same thing. It's that basic lack of competition, of judgment, of who's being better, or who's doing better. You just don't have that. You know, for you, people are equal, and the work is the work. Do you know what I mean? And that's what comes through. That's what comes through.
Well, a lot of people have to compete for jobs.
Yes, that's true, but when you're playing, competition does not contribute to good music. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, fine, you have to, you know, you have to get the gig, but once you've got the gig, it's like, you know, I don't know anything much about the kinds of sports that this world is fond of, you know, baseball, basketball, stuff like that. But I used to watch Michael Jordan. And I watched Michael Jordan because one of the reasons I watched him was because he didn't, it wasn't all about him. You know, he was about making everybody look good, about making the team achieve. And if that meant that he had to take the ball, then he did. But if somebody else would be better, he did that. And it's the same thing. It's knowing that you're in it together, right? And that you don't... And this is just not true in our culture. This is not a culture of team. This is a culture of I have to stand out, otherwise I don't. Otherwise I feel bad, or I haven't achieved, or whatever. So it's real remarkable that you have developed this way of being.
That's very fortunate.
I agree. But I think this has got to go back to your family.
And others. There are many people.
Oh, so you can see, I can see it in your eyes that you know who they are.
Many people. Yeah. Not just family.
So you had a lot of...
I had many families. I mean, people that I love, I respect their opinions. I always listened. A person could say something to me. I didn't necessarily agree with it. So what I would do is grab it and put it on a shelf someplace.
Yeah.
And maybe somewhere down the line it might come back. I'll reach up on the shelf
and say,
use a little of this.
Right.
That's what it was.
But again, it's the same thing. It's that you didn't dismiss out of hand pretty much anything.
I always figure that people can learn things from anyone, even the so-called person that is the wino, or they call him a wino, but at least I can learn how to drink wine. You know, that's something. Mm-hmm. I might not want to drink it.
Right.
You know,
but that's
but
what
I just put it up there.
But that's what he has to offer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you value it.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing as you were talking about with the kids in the class. Yeah. Is that might not be your music, but you valued the fact that they valued it.
Yeah.
That's so... I think that's really unusual.
I don't know.
Never mind. You don't have to know.
Right.
You just have to be.
Yeah.
And then I'll judge.
Yeah.
I do. I think it's unusual. And I think it's wonderful that you taught. Because so many teachers are like my mother's teacher, who says, this is good and this is bad, and you're not it, so you're not good. And destroyed what would have been an incredible love for her in a stroke, you know. They shouldn't allow people like that to teach. They should insist that people like you teach. Well, okay, yes.
Part one. Well, we're going to have...
Yes, we certainly are. Okay, let me just ask you, is there anything that you would want to say about being a musician, about being an artist, about making a life with music, or anything else, for that matter?
Well, I think musicians should be more diversified if they're going to make it as a, in the commercial part of it.
You mean they should have something to fall back on? Is that what you mean? Or they should play more than one kind of music?
They should take lessons, not necessarily from the financial world today, but things that the financial world has taught us over the years.
To be careful about money. Is that what you mean?
If they're going to survive.
If they're going to survive, yeah.
Since we're in that kind of society.
Yes, we don't take care of our itinerant musicians in this society, so they have to be
and
able
And musicians to need to learn to take care of themselves.
You know, it's so interesting. So many of the musicians that I have talked to have said the same thing. A variation on this theme. You know, don't expect this to take care of you.
That's right.
Take care of yourself. Right. Well, all right, so we're going to stop, and who knows, since this is the second time, maybe there'll be more. Thank you so much, John Lamb.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
As always, I hope that when you are listening to John, that you are asking yourself, is this how I feel about my life? Is this how I feel about my work? Is this how I feel about the way I spend my days? Am I completely immersed in my life? Am I my very best self? Or am I questioning minute to minute, should I be doing this? Should I be doing that? Is this right? Is this wrong? Is this good? Is this bad? Will they like it? Will they hate it? Will they like me? Will they hate me? When you listen to John, you know he's not doing any of that. John is living inside his life. He is his very self. And again, I hope that when you listen to him, you are stimulated, inspired to ask yourself, what is keeping me from feeling like that about my life, about the way I spend my days? So, if you are asking that question and you'd like to talk to me about that, then please go up on my website, thelynshow.com. That's thelynshow. Don't leave the E out of Lynn. It's thelynshow.com. And up there, there's an email tab. You can click on that and ask me any question you'd like. I'll be happy to answer whatever you ask me. You can listen to me read the first chapter of my book, which is called When You Can, You Will. You can listen to all the interviews I've ever done, including this one, if you want to listen to it again. You can get me to come and talk to your group or organization. Well, as always, I hope you got something you could use from this show. Something that amused you, something that informed you, something that inspired you, something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be, too. You can hear John play at this year's Sarasota Jazz Festival, where he will be joining other amazing musicians as they celebrate the 90th birthday of icon Dick Hyman. And I will be playing my interview with Dick next week. But you can hear a little bit, a taste of John playing, as we're going to go out on a CD called Live at the Side Door, which includes John as part of the Nate Nahar trio, Nate on guitar and Chuck Redd on drums. And so here now is just a taste of John Lamb. Thank you.
see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. Chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have got